The Mauritius Command, set in the early years of the 19th century, starring David Robb as Captain Jack Aubrey and Richard Delane as the naval surgeon and spy, Stephen Maturin. As Aubrey prepares to lead his small flotilla of Royal Navy ships against French forces in the Indian Ocean, he wrestles with the problem of how to deal with the captains under his command, particularly the dashing Lord Clonfert, who had once been his superior officer.
When we make a cable's length from the privateer, then we go at him.
She is quiet, sir.
He shall be first aboard, Mr. Cotton, at this rate. Clonfert's boats are still behind that spit of land.
That is 300 yards now, I think, sir.
Very well, then. Good luck to you, Cotton.
And to you, Aubrey.
Now, men, raise a cheer and stretch out like guns! Lay straight for our starboard main chains!
The Mauritius Command by Patrick O'Brien. Dramatized in three parts by Roger Daines. Episode 2.
Keep ahead right at them. Clonfert's boats are taking the larboard. Press hard, boys!
I hear them cheer, but I don't see them, sir.
Here's the smoke. They're coming on, make no doubt of it. Ready the grapples! Axes!
They're cheering, but I don't think they're moving.
Clonfert cannot look on. He must attack.
I don't believe he intends to stir.
Too late now for us to do anything other than race on. On then! Never mind the great! Agamemnon's forever! Precious hot work, Mr. Cotton! Mate!
They're beginning to fall back, sir.
Buchan, Thwaites, Scaramanus to the Crozier Halyards! As soon as... Cotton!
An able, dashing man, then. The Lord Clonfert?
Oh, the Agamemnon was a crowded wardroom. She wearing the flag. The West Indies station is a busy one still.
I'm perfectly aware, Jack, of your dislike of saying anything unpleasant of a former shipmate, even though you now have to rely upon him as a subordinate captain.
It was 10 years ago, Stephen. I hardly knew Clonfert then.
You will permit me to say that although I honour your principle in theory, I find it somewhat irritating, having, as it may, a detrimental effect upon our business of sweeping this French squadron from the Indian Ocean.
Lord Clonfert has made quite a reputation for himself since our West Indies days.
Did you take the privateer, sir?
Of course. The French captain flung his empty pistols at my head and swam for it, followed by most of his remaining men. Luck never deserted me in those days, Stephen.
Man might esteem himself better served by luck had he been supported by his fellow lieutenant and the other boat.
It was a cruel, bitter little action. I've seen many such since. And afterward, Clonfert explained it all.
I was right up against a sandbank, Aubrey. The North Channel proved much more shallow than we had hoped. We found ourselves quickly pinned down by their shore battery.
Cotton said you weren't moving.
Cotton is dead. You made the most gallant dash, Aubrey. I was in the very act of landing to take the battery from behind when you made your run in. Gallant. Dashing. You must know it would have been suicide, though, for me to have moved.
It did all seem very uninteresting and unimportant, certainly by comparison to Cotton's death.
You were fond of this man, Cotton.
Boy, really. Yes. I should have been proud to serve with him in any ship at any time. To have such a one as my lieutenant now.
Did you find it strange, when you were fit again for duty, that the official letter should have omitted your name?
You have seen the letter.
I've been well informed.
Clonfert was senior to me at that time, Stephen. He had taken over when I was wounded, finished the capture.
And so he exchanged into the Mars? And you forgot it?
I should scarcely have remembered him at all, was it not for the noise the newspapers make of the dashing Lord Clomfort.
His court-martial and dismissal from the service, for instance.
I know the officer he struck, Stephen. I would knock the man down myself at half the provocation.
You would not.
We both know the gazettes may suppress truth and suggest falsehood, but they cannot possibly invent victories. The spiking of the guns at Abydos, the destruction of that Turkish squadron.
Yes, Clomfort is highly thought of by Sir Sidney Smith. Attaching himself to that somewhat flamboyant gentleman has proved extremely useful.
Smith is a dashing officer.
He gave your man Nelson much uneasiness in the Mediterranean. And Clomfort is back in the Navy. Are you in any danger, I wonder, of disfavoring one of your subordinate captains on account of his friends?
Do you accuse me of favoring Corbett? I do not.
I merely posit the question.
Corbett's reputation is beyond reproach. For all the man is a slave driver. The French fear him. Pym, too, is a solid fighting captain. But reputation is not always to be relied upon, Stephen. Not when the enemy is roaming unchecked about the sea, snapping up Indiamen as easy as kiss my hand.
I have offended you.
No. Not in the least, Stephen. But I have to handle these people right. Yes, I confess. I have made a poor start with Clomfort. At the first gathering of my captains, I asked him for a statement of the Otter's condition.
The sloop I have the honour to command, sir, is always ready to put to sea.
The merest story. Everyone knew it, Clomfort as well as the others, the moment it was out of his mouth. No ship can always be ready, whatever hearts of oak may say. And I fear I made our poor start worse during my tour of the squadron.
You are very welcome, sir.
Why, this is the royal yacht itself, Clomfort. Never in my life have I seen such a display of gold leaf.
I am sure my officers are pleased to hear you say so, sir. Shall we go to my cabin?
They should not have been listening, Stephen. Not so direct. That underbred open, staring as if the officers were just the men in costume. Tailored to perfection, though they are.
Is it a little much?
Even the mids had laced cocked hats, Hessian boots with gold tassels. My lord this, my lord that. Yes, my lord. But they like him, that is clear. And so do the lower deck otters. Cheerful, smiling.
Did you tell him how he failed to bring his wife to his side as she requested you?
I merely stated that because of an unfortunate misunderstanding about the time, I was obliged to leave Plymouth without being able to take the lady aboard.
Misunderstanding? That is not in my recollection. I mind rather being bundled from a bed at 3 o'clock in the morning. The lady sent to the wrong inn, signals disregarded. Our poor boat made to row as though we were escaping from the Day of Judgment.
What a scaramouche you are, Stephen.
Well, it's probably as well that you kept your explanation short, Jack. Circumstantial details do often destroy a tale entirely.
Well, I am sure that Lady Clonfort will have taken the next Indiaman out.
She will be in much the greater comfort.
I do beg your pardon, Commodore Orby, sir. Would you sit down? I have grown so used to Eastern ways, I cannot do without my sofa.
If it is all the same to you, Clonfort, I should as soon keep an eye on the Boadicea's boats. The Simon's Bay Yard has rooked me blind on powder and shot, and I should like to be certain it all reaches my ship safe.
Should you care to taste a little of this Constantia, sir? And do toy with an Aleppo fig here. I conceive they make an interesting combination.
Infinitely obliged to you. But the fact of the matter is, Sirius has already given me a great deal of capital port. And Nereid, a great deal of capital Madeira. What I should really prize beyond anything is a cup of coffee.
Oh, I am chagrined, sir. It is not possible. I am mortified, desolated, but I drink no coffee, nor do my officers.
Never mind. This is an uncommon fine tusk.
With submission, sir, I believe horn is the proper term. It comes from a unicorn. Sir Sidney shot the beast himself and most generously gave it to me.
So I can boast of having held a true unicorn's horn.
You may take your oath on it, sir.
Has it occurred to you that he may have thought it true? Admiral Smith is a vain and boastful man, quite capable of that foolish tale.
He is also a noble and most enterprising officer. He defeated Bonaparte at Acre. Few men have grounds for such boasting.
Yeah, perhaps Clonfert is of that strange build.
I hope so, with all my heart. But a narwhal's tusk is a thing I can recognize at 50 paces, Stephen. Never mind. So long as Clonfert produces something like Smith's results, he may show away with all the unicorns in the world.
Sponge out!
Otter, September the 3rd. 20 degrees 50 south, 55 degrees 20 east. At 3 p.m., all hands to exercising the great guns. The best display yet of our gunnery practice. Moderate seas, winds ditto, south by east.
2 minutes and 15 seconds, my lord.
It was nearer the mark. We should have waited for the top of the roll. Be quick to the load now, my boys! We'll have another two broadsides if we go at it! How did Aubrey?
Boadicea fired 3 and 5 minutes, my lord. Two within 1 minute and 55 seconds, and battered their targets to pieces.
We must make a brave show, Mr. Tompkinson. Put out a good display for Aubrey, I beg.
Load your powder!
We shall, my lord.
And a ribbon for the crew that hits first!
Yeah! September the 7th. At 10 a.m., a council of war upon Rodriguez to plan the attack of St. Paul Harbor. Commodore Aubrey much in want of advice.
I see no real difficulty, Colonel.
There remains this question of landing through the surf.
Well, I cannot pretend to be well acquainted myself with the western side of La Reunion. Fortunately, two of my captains know the island intimately. Captain Corbett?
300 days in the year, so the wind stays in the southeast. A landing north of St. Paul in such an event will be easy as kiss my hand.
I have to tell you that my soldiers are not clever in boats.
Lord Clonfert?
Even with a westerly wind, sir, I would undertake to set 1,000 men safe onshore. I know a sheltered cove hard by the St. Giles Inlet.
The Pointe des Galets is the better place.
Corbett, that is 7 miles from St. Paul.
A surer spot and an easy march.
Of 3 hours and more, when time will be of the essence.
Commodore Aubrey is likely to attach more weight to the opinion of a post captain with a real knowledge of these waters, Lord Clonfert.
The St. Giles Inlet is the obvious choice.
No one but a blockhead would attempt anything other than the Pointe des Galley.
My native pilot knows the gaps in the reef.
A captain who relies upon an escaped slave.
That slave, sir, has taken me where you could not go.
Commodore Aubrey, many years of service have I spent upon this station, this war and the last. I think I have the advantage of a junior commander, sir.
My choice will accord with yours, Aubrey. If you will forgive me, I will prepare my men to strike camp.
Of course, Colonel. Captain Corbett.
Sir.
We will fix upon your landing place. You will oblige me by agreeing with Colonel Keating about the transporting of his men aboard the Nereid. Now, if you please.
At once, sir.
Lord Clonfert.
Sir?
I am exceedingly concerned that this display of ill feeling should have taken place in the Colonel's presence. You forget the respect due to senior officers, sir. This must not occur again.
Commodore Aubrey has given me the precious gift of 2 hours and a boat I was to observe Taffray's starling. Particularly rare, but no. No sooner do I set foot into the launch when I'm summoned to the Otter for present advice.
I believed that you wished to see this case in its crisis, Dr. Matcher.
What is it then, colleague? A fit? A catalepsy?
This is it, goddamn. A tear my guts out crisis, too.
Lord Clonfert is in considerable pain.
I am in 3 minds about it at the least. Colleague, it is a blessed relief to have you to consult with. Dr. Maturin is here, my lord.
Oh. Doctor, you are most benevolent.
I'll proceed to the examination, if I may.
Vastly obliged.
I have thought to try Lucatellus's balsam.
Does this hurt, sir?
Firmum, sir, mixed to the animist.
In exiguum amplitudinis?
Me here in the gratium.
I am desolate, Doctor, to receive you in this condition.
Have you ate much today, sir?
Oh, little fruit.
And there?
Oh, God! Oh.
The iliac passion, perhaps?
Oh. No, no, McCann. Oh. The nearest quacksalver would not make such a diagnosis. Oh. Not worthy of you. Well, sir, if you please... Drink this draught down. It will help.
I hope so.
There now.
No!
Oh. I incline to colonic spasm. Oh. Lord Clonfert, if you would lie back.
Yes.
There. You've known him a great while, I collect.
Sure. I knew him as a boy. I treated his father. I've served with him these many years.
I believe you may do well to exhibit Helleborus Niger in the amount of 20 minims.
That is an heroic dose.
It is an heroic patient, is it not?
That it is, sure.
Add 40 drops of the Thebaic tincture and 60 of antimonial wine, accompanied naturally by a little Armenian bowl as a temporary expedient.
Will it suffice?
I've known it answer in tormina of a less intense kind. Does he sleep?
It does. The blessed laudanum. Now, where would you be carrying that new personal box, colleague?
This is an interesting case.
Is it not? It is up here. That is where the trouble lies, Dr. Maturin. Up here. You see, this was all brought on by your Captain Aubrey's checking of him.
I'm inclined to agree with your rejection of a physical cause, but Aubrey...
He called my lord to order. It was meant to be private, but... Oh, Corbett is bad enough for him, but... Aubrey. Do you want a drink?
I do not. Can you speak to peccatum illud horribile inter Christianos non nominandum?
No, certainly not.
I've known it produce strange sufferings.
No, there is repeated venereal commerce with the other sex.
That's not necessarily a bar to the other.
Healthy and repeated, and always has been. The women flock to him. Though certainly he is affected more by the men, so far as his crises go.
He minds what men do, you mean?
I have never met Aubrey, but I have heard of him. Oh, aye, often and often, long before he ever came out to the Cape.
He speaks of him?
Every piece of service gossip, every mention in the Gazette. Oh, the great frigate captains, Cochrane, Pellew, Aubrey. You cannot leave them alone.
He is envious?
They're every doing compared with his own. Analysed, diminished, magnified, praised, decried. Like a man cannot but pick at a wound that will not heal. I be damned to his whimsies. Why does he have to be always Alexander?
Stretch out, boys!
September the 20th, 1809. At 5 a.m., Boadicea, under topsails, laid in for St. Paul Harbour on La Reunion. At 6, signalled Otter to commence attack upon enemy fortifications on La Neuve. Captain Lord Clonfert led his men with great gallantry.
Lay me right down La Neuve's throat! No! We'll show Aubrey what my otters can do! No!
There's a great deal still left undone, however.
The wind is veering to westward. We cannot stay much longer.
General de Brully has a column with artillery advancing over the causeway from Saint-Denis, though it will take him 2 days at least.
But when he does get here, he can lob mortar shells onto us like sitting ducks where we lie. Soon come, soon go. That is my opinion.
You're right, Corbett. I should not rest easy, though, did we not blow up at least the first three buildings on Dr. Maturin's list.
From the political point of view, I should rejoice to see the French archives go up in flames. It would produce such an admirable confusion.
If I may speak, sir.
By all means, Lord Clonfert.
I believe it should be attempted at once. My men have already destroyed 4 enemy batteries and are with child to prove themselves again. Were you to leave me ashore, sir, with a party of marines and my otters, I will undertake to cross off Dr. Maturin's list for him.
Very well, Lord Clonfert. You have already done most handsomely.
Thank you, sir.
I shall be glad to see you continue your good work.
Aha! There go the administrative buildings. The tax gatherer's records all.
Look at the smoke! Over beyond the arsenal.
Yes.
You know, Stephen, I'm growing almost used to being a spectator.
That is a very pretty conflagration.
Yesterday, when all the others were doing and I not with them amongst them,
I thought I could have hanged myself from the mere misery of not being there. I suppose that is what you pay for command. What is it, Mr. Seymour?
I beg pardon, sir. Mr. Dale of the Streatham Indiaman is in a great taking. He says they're burning his silk.
His what?
The Streatham's chief cargo was £500,000 worth of silk, sir.
£500,000?
It appears that the French stored it in that warehouse.
Signal to Lord Clomford. Tell him to... Never mind, Mr. Seymour.
Here is Dr. Maturin's list, sir. You will observe it is completed.
Pray tell me, I do not see on this the warehouse you burned behind the arsenal.
The warehouse, sir? I was informed it was government property. A most respectable man, a priest, sir, assured me. Have I done wrong?
Well, I'm sure you acted with the best intentions, Clonforth. But it seems the Indiaman silk was there.
Sir?
To the tune of £500,000.
My God.
Pray sit down.
My God. I have destroyed £500,000.
Well, I dare say they exaggerate.
My God.
Never mind it, Clonforth. We have anyway saved John Company £3 million in the worth of their recaptured ships. They themselves acknowledge that. And you acted nobly. Nobly. I envied you yesterday on shore as you drove through those batteries. There was glory for you. Are you quite well, Clonforth?
I...
Should you like some coffee? Some dry clothes?
I am quite well, sir. I thank you.
I'm glad of it. For it gives me great pleasure, sir, to appoint you to the Nereid. Captain Corbett is to leave her to you as he is to carry the news of our little victory at St. Paul back to the Cape. I've given him the former Caroline.
May I ask, sir, about the Otter?
Tomkinson, your first lieutenant, may have her.
He will make a fine commander, sir.
I'm sure of it.
You will forgive me, sir, if my thanks are poor. Tongue-tied. This is entirely unexpected news.
The decisive change, sir. I well remember my own step from a sloop to a post ship. There is a full shining glory in it, which your conduct has merited entirely.
I never thought, sir, when we were lieutenants together, I never thought I should be thanking you for making me post.
Here's the oddest fish. Clonforth, I mean. I gave him his step, and you might almost think that I'd done him an injury.
You made him a post-captain advisedly, not from any sudden whim.
Oh, one of them had to go. I sent Corbett away with a plum. He will be much caressed at the Admiralty when he brings our news. I have known brutal captains improve with a lightening of their step.
And in consequence, you've made a post-captain of Clonforth.
Oh, it is rather a case of faux demeure, as you would say. Perhaps he may lay out popularity more than I think, right? But his men will follow him anywhere. Your foremast hand dearly loves a lord.
Should you like to have to rely upon him?
I must use what I have, Stephen. Just as I would take advantage of a tide or a shift in the wind. I shall let him take most of his otters into the Nereid. Scatter the Nereids about the rest of the squadron. Corbett made a damned unhealthy ship of his command. At least Clonforth will make her happy. Now, Stephen, are you ready?
Yes.
I'm as nimble as an ape today. I imitate an able seaman's climb, Jack, to a nicety.
Boadicea. December the 28th, 57 degrees 29 east, 20 degrees 9 south. At 2 p.m. hove to lie in observation of Port Louis, capital of Mauritius. Wind steady, west southwest. Seas moderate. The squadron ahead and astern.
Just the one more step. The lover's hole, there.
Oh.
There, I have you.
Ooh.
make yourself snug among the stunstones.
Your glass.
Thank you.
You have the white building?
Flying the tricolor. I do.
That is General Descamps' headquarters. Now, if you come down to the shore, and a little right...
A ship?
That is the Ballon. She's swearing up a new foretop mast, most seamanlike. They're well worked up, these Frenchmen. Not like the poor bottled-up fellows of the Mediterranean or the Channel that rarely come out save to face a beating. So inside Ballon, you have the Victor. You see the French colours over ours?
Capture and make no doubt?
Yes. Though indeed she was theirs before she was ours. And now she's theirs again. Not for long, if we have a say in the matter. Inside again.
The French colours over the Portuguese. What can that be?
That is the Minerva, 52. Very heavy frigate, Stephen. And no sign of her having been roughly handled that I can see. Portuguese must have struck at a few shot and a whiff of powder, the dogs.
Now I can see the broad pendant. Their Commodore, their own Jack Aubrey.
Don't they just wish it? That is the Venus, Commodore Hamelin. Ah, she has been handled rough. Bowsprit done in the gammoning, handrails all a who. Not a dead eye left on a larboard, hardly, and very low in the water. Must have been caught in the teeth of a right blow. I wonder they managed to bring her in. She should not have got past Pym and Clonfert.
Do you suppose this squadron means to come out at all?
Never in life. It looks like Brest or Toulon, all over again. Steady blockading until we get down to Salt Horse and Old Weevil's wedding cake. Unless I can amuse them. Make Hamelin believe we are no longer in the offing or in strength.
I see the Nereid's gig.
That damn fool boat's crew. Why does Clomford have to make such a rare show of himself?
I've known several other captains dress their crew in odd garments.
There is such a thing as measure.
You do not look forward to the meeting.
Pym and Clomford have let the enemy slip by their blockade. It is no pleasant thing to have to demand an explanation.
Sir, you well know how difficult it is to bottle up Port Louis tight.
The Venus was gone before ever we reached our stations.
Yet she slipped back in when you were there, Captain Pym. And the Ballon.
In the dark of the moon, sir.
How's that?
The Sirius was closer in than I.
With the wind in the southeast, sir.
I understand Duperrey of the Ballon to be a most determined fighting captain.
Oh, that is good to know, Clawford.
And so she got out. For which I do not blame you, gentlemen. But she took our Victor, and together they seem to have overcome the thumping great Minerva. Then the whole pack of them slipped back into Port Louis. We have not improved the odds.
They have been lucky, sir, with the sea breeze and the tide.
Pym, what do you say?
I take the responsibility, sir, as senior captain.
What I blame them for is for falling out over it. Like a couple of crossed dogs, answering short and glaring at one another. Whose fault it was, in fact, I cannot make out.
Does it indeed matter?
All I can be sure of is that they're on wretched terms. Clomfort seems to have a genius that way.
In other ways, too. He's charted most of these coasts and is the source of a surprising fund of information.
Oh, he has real abilities, if only... But I am surprised at Pym... Such an easy, good-natured fellow.
When you've finished with my rosin, Jack.
Hmm?
My rosin, nope. I say. Clonfert will suffice for my needs. I should like to begin the work of preparation upon Mauritius. Some well-chosen rumour, some indiscretion in the proper place, may conceivably bring your French frigates out to you.
In that case, you may join the Nereid at any time you may choose.
Nereid, December 29th. At 10, Dr. Maturin brought aboard safely. set topsails and t'gants, made course southwest. Rising sea with winds freshening, veering west by south.
There you are, Doctor.
Sound as a trumpet.
Dr. Maturin, you are very welcome. I trust you are not too shaken up.
I'm not. Many times made such a crossing in the air from ship to ship for the albatross.
Mr. Briggs, signal permission to part company, if you will.
Permission to part company, my lord.
Mr. Satterley, 2 points to the south, I thank you.
Another point or two more would suit my lord with this wind and your permission.
Certainly, Mr. Satterley. Make it so.
You are surrounded by friends, sir, in your new ship, I observe.
It is far better, far more efficient, to have been permitted to keep so many of my otters together.
Yeah.
I do miss Tompkinson cruelly, though I should be the last to begrudge him his command, particularly so since his fortunate step owes entirely to my own.
I think I have never seen so brisk and cheerful a ship's company.
Why, thank you, Doctor.
Jocund, even.
We have been together through many a blow. Ha! What do you say to my cabin?
A strikingly beautiful room.
Ain't it indeed? Corbett had it all bare, scrubbed wood and brass. I have not yet made it quite the thing for a post-captain. Possible in a sloop, perhaps, but a trifle shabby for a frigate.
Yes, I note especially the twin looking glasses.
They give me something to walk between and to look at. I am glad to have the opportunity, Dr. Maturin, to thank you for your most obliging care of Rodriguez that time. My seizure.
I cannot say I did more than my duty or less than my oath requires.
Nevertheless, it is a wretched, unmanly kind of disease. I have begged McAdam to use the knife if it would be of any good.
I think that it would not.
It is distressing. Désolant in the highest degree to have it thought of as nervous. Something like a fit of the mother. McAdam is a worthy man, but he will dwell upon his experiences. His asylum in Belfast failed, you know.
You are not to suppose there is anything in the least discreditable in your malady.
You believe not?
The degree of pain I observed exceeds anything I've seen before in any tormentor, whatever their origin.
That is a curious relief to hear you say so.
It is a grave matter, indeed it is.
I do not suppose the Commodore suffers ever from anything of this kind.
If he did, I should certainly not speak of it, nor of any patient under my hands.
Ah, yes.
You're fortunate, sir, to have such an advisor as Dr. McAdam in daily reach.
Yes, honest McAdam. I believe he is sincerely devoted to me.
I should like, by your leave, to wait upon him presently.
Well, he was somewhat indisposé this morning, watch, or he would certainly have paid his respects when you came aboard. But we must overlook certain frailties and an unfortunate manner. He will be up and about by now.
How did you find our patient?
In a high flow of spirits, the hellebore answers I collect.
Well, it seems to. I've also tried valerian and that eases the anxiety in some degrees. But nothing is there that is new. Little scope for my studies in a ship of war.
Manias, surely.
Oh, yes, but eh, two penny. I have not had a decent melancholia from the lower deck this whole commission. The tires are kept far too busy, do you see.
It is a fair commonplace that an active working man is a healthy one.
It is aft you must look for your fine flower of derangement. Aft with the gentlemen, the purses, clerks and schoolmasters. Mm. All of them mewed up, more or less alone.
Yes, the solitary. Above all, the captain.
Did he speak of Captain Aubrey at all?
Once only, and in passing, it was a circumstance I found remarkable.
Aye, significant too. He has been on about Captain Aubrey, colleague, these last few days. On and on.
Did you note the pseudo insignia?
I took particular notice of it since you'd pointed it out. He is obliged to shift his coat after every bout.
Belladonna would doubtless suppress the sweat.
His chest is covered in the marks, each one pale on the right side from scrubbing away the salt.
Right side alone.
Even so.
Interesting to analyse that. No more grog, I think. This practice, it appears to me, is self-defeating.
I find it helps.
Not the drink. Our patient has to be attacked, I suspect, through his reason
You're coming into my way of thinking, colleague.
He's a man of some parts.
Some? Many? He should be a great man. More than Cochrane, more than Pellew, more even than Nelson.
I conceive the great admiral would not permit of his orders to be questioned upon his own quarterdeck.
If Lord Clonfert suffers his men to play their fullest part, it is that his ship be better managed. Does that not redound to his credit? He should know.
He is a man for whom truth is what he can persuade others to believe. And that leads inexorably to anxiety, the probability of detection, disgrace.
No! The trouble lies much deeper. Your belladonna and your logic are pills from the same box. They can only suppress the symptoms.
Could you not prevail upon him to abandon his striving, nervous excitement, his marching to and fro between his glasses, admiring at each turn his own reflection, his unicorn's horn?
How do you propose I should attain this end, colleague?
I suspect he must gain the unfeigned admiration of those he himself admires.
You're asking me to grant him conventional glory, to be complacent in making him less than the man he is. You ask too much. I will not repair a chronometer with a pickaxe.
Boadicea, August the 6th, 1810. 57 degrees 28 east, 20 degrees 9 south. Blockade of Port Louis resumed at 4. At midday, signaled the squadron's captains to dinner and council. The island's governor-designate, Mr. Farker, and Dr. Maturin in attendance.
Gentlemen, I propose to take a hammer to the enemy.
Yeah.
Their Boulogne and Minerve are away on a cruise. Our local advantage is therefore 5-2, and it is high time that we take it.
Yes. What then do you propose, Commodore?
The Ile de la Paz. It lies at the other side of the island, Mr. Parker, on a reef, at the very end of the only deep water way into Port Southeast. Lord Clonfert knows it well.
It is a devilish channel, sir, narrow, with a double dogleg and any number of banks and rocks in its bed. But I know it, as you say, perfectly.
The enemy expects us in the north. We've been blockading Port Louis for far too damn long. Naturally, we shall strike them at Port Southeast.
Yes. A couple of frigates ought to manage it, sir. We shall have to maintain our blockade, after all.
I'm not to be teaching you a business, gentlemen, but here is a vast area with the words canoe passage at high tide. Your channel is a mere lean serpent at best.
It can be done, Doctor. And when the island is seized, the French cannot easily retake it.
If we hold the Ile de la Paz, we deny them their best harbour after Port Louis.
Yes.
I understand the tactical worth of such an expedition, Commodore. But the battles that will win us the island must, of necessity, be fought on land. And the few regiments we possess must somehow be put down on that mainland of Mauritius.
Ile de la Paz then becomes our base for that, Mr. Farker. You will have your governorship, I promise.
It is a beautiful plan.
Ain't it? Now, Colonel Keating is preparing to send some of his Bombay gunners and European troops into the Nereid. They will garrison the place when we have taken it. Dr. Maturin will also be aboard as the governor's agent.
It will be a pleasure to voyage with you again, Doctor.
The Nereid will lead, sir?
Well, Pym, she does possess more knowledge than all the rest of the squadron together.
It must be done by boats, sir, and in the night. A ship standing in against their fortifications would be sadly mauled. Mm.
Captain Pym shall command.
Thank you, sir. We shall thump them.
I sincerely hope you do, sir, for countless reasons. Amongst them, the fact that I touch neither emolument nor allowance until I enter into my functions.
What a companionable host Lord Clonfert is, I find.
You're not used to living in the company of a civilized man.
That may depend, colleague, upon your conception of civilization.
Have you taken something against my captain, Dr. Maturin?
I've not. He can be quiet without constraint. He can be a gentle, vulnerable creature. His women no doubt see him so, and it may be this that accounts for his very notorious successes among them.
Oh, aye, the women.
But when three or more men are gathered, or when he's anxious, that intuition fails him completely.
You've spent much time with him. He takes pleasure in your company.
Nothing profits a man like a proper self-esteem. I have real hope that the prospect of resounding action will soon give Clonfert a truer basis for it.
Captain's compliments to Dr. Maturin. There is a mermaid on the starboard bow.
I am glad you saw her.
I've always longed for such a treat. I've searched the lagoons of Rodriguez, but always in disappointment. Till this perfect moment.
It gives me the greatest pleasure to see you happy.
She's no maid, though. Or she has a friend who is none. Do you see her baby?
I do.
Oh, she dives.
Well, I hope that may prove some layoff against my wretched news. Sirius has taken the wind out of our sails. See where she lays.
That's the Union Jack above the fortress.
They must have gained 20 leagues on us while we were beating up in the heavy weather.
They've taken the Ile de la Passe.
If Pym had any bowels, he would have waited for tonight. After all, I did lend him my pilot. But I am forgetting. Should you like some breakfast, Doctor?
You're very good, my lord, but I believe I shall stay on deck in the hope of seeing another siren. I should not miss run for a dozen breakfasts.
I shall have the food brought to you here.
Good morning, my lord.
You missed the mermaid, my dear colleague.
I did not. I saw the brute out of the quarter gallery scuttle. It was only a manatee.
A dugong, surely?
It is all one.
The whole breadth of Africa separates their respective realms.
In what concerns my studies, the brute is of consequence only in its perfect illustration of the irresistible strength of suggestion.
Stop it, Lemon. You were looking the other way, or half blind.
She was holding a comb. I saw it clear as day.
It was no comb. That was a glass.
Would you listen to their gap down there in the waist?
Not I. Never heeded too chatty a ship to attend to any one conversation. They seem displeased.
Of course, every man knows the ill luck a mermaid brings. That is not the point. They saw the flash of that wet flipper. They have translated it with total gospel old conviction into a comb or a glass.
I'll fight you for it. Over a chest, you and any two of your fellows.
Men have gone to the stake for less.
You're not worth the effort, you glass-eyed lubber.
You're both of you entirely out. It was a hairbrush.
Sirius, August the 16th, at midday, 7 foot of water in the well and falling. New topmast yard swung up. The dead prepared for burial. At 1:30 p.m., the Nereid's captain came aboard.
May I offer my congratulations, sir?
Thank you, Lord Clonfert. It was a bloody little action, as you can see.
I am bound to say, sir, that the Nereid feels she might have been allowed to take part in the fortress's storming.
I really cannot go into all that now. The rule in these matters is first come, first served. The French would be much better prepared tonight if they had observed two frigates in the offing all day.
May I ask if Captain Pym has taken any prisoners aboard?
You will be pleased to hear several, Doctor. Nor did the French commandant have time to destroy his signal books. My dining cabin is at your disposal.
What are my orders, sir?
Very simple. You will land your soldiers to garrison the island. You will hold it until you receive further instructions. In the meantime, you will carry out such operations as seem appropriate.
What operations?
You will consult with Dr. Maturin. His advice is to be followed in all matters political. I am ordered north for Port Louis, just as soon as I have buried my men here. You will forgive me, Doctor. I have lost a young cousin.
I'm sorry for it, sir.
The service is a hard one. The man that cannot accept that is better off out of it.
Je vous remercie, madame. Ce traversin de plume de dodo est pour moi une prise inattendue. Mille remerciements.
Run, Doctor!
Weber?
What? Run for the boats. The enemy is in sight.
Five ships standing into windward. Victor, I can see, leading. Then their big frigate, the Minerve. I cannot make out the next. Doctor! Your bolster will not be proof against French fire, no matter how tight you may hug it.
I will not let it go, sir. This precious traversine is stuffed with the feathers of perhaps the last dodo to tread the earth.
Ah.
I paid an ancient gentlewoman a small fortune to secure it, she not wishing to give up the best sleeping aid sent by God to the old.
By God, It is the balloon. Stretch out! Stretch out there! Pull strong!
What do you intend to do?
I shall lure them in. If Mr. Satterley has an ounce of sense, he will already... Yes! There it is. Nereide is hoisting the French ensign and pendant.
This is enterprise, my lord. This is better than your Cochrane could do.
Thank you, Mr. Webber. We will pull for the fortress, if you please.
The fortress, sir. And stretch out for all you're worth, boys.
There will be time to make ready for them. Pray God they do not turn away. We shall trap them, Doctor. We shall take them!
And so what happened?
I sat there on my bolster in the fort as people ran hither and thither. I've seen actions with you, Jack, that are marked by a quiet, efficient cheerfulness. There was none of that.
Soldiers and sailors often are at cross purposes.
As you and Colonel Keating? No food was served out either. A small point, but one I've observed you always insist upon.
So the ship stood in, and you waiting for them?
She will come around into the deep water. 20 yards from Nereide, no more. They have not smoked us, men! They have not an inkling of what awaits them.
This will be your crowning moment, my lord, your most dashing coup.
Every man poised for my order, Mr. Webber. Once they are under our guns, they can neither turn, nor bear away, nor move any faster.
Victor has made her turn, my lord.
Now, Nereide!
They hauled down our false stolen signals, ran up the English colours, let fly. Single, vast, prolonged explosion.
The Victor would shatter in a minute. At no range, and Nereide's gunners are no slow coaches.
And then the deadly time. Minerve came into the channel.
By Jupiter! Wait for my order! Wait for my order!
Dr. Maturin! Are you all right?
Huh?
Are you all right, sir?
My bolster! Here it is!
Lord Clomford says, can you help, sir, with the wounded? Bloody cheering fool of an artilleryman. Pulls down the French flag only to fling it wide onto a burning matchtub. The whole upper magazine is gone up.
I need every man that can stand and point a gun. Mr. Webber, I intend to shift to the Nereide and attack Minerve.
She is so much the heavier ship, my lord.
She is not yet clear for action. At the dogleg, she will not be able to turn. We shall have room to luff up and rake her. Rake her again and again, Mr. Webber. How Aubrey will envy us.
He might have succeeded, too, but against all logic, the Boulogne chose to come in.
She could have escaped, but she came on. Gallant. Gallant Duperré.
She threw an extraordinary bow wave in such a dangerous channel, fired her full array into the fortress as she passed, then came straight for Clomfort and his Nereide.
Ready the guns to fire again! Mr. Satterley! Luff up to rake her!
Beg your pardon, my lord, but she has cut the spring to our cable.
Back to topsails, Mr. Briggs. Hard to starboard, then. If we slew, we shall never be able to fire into that Frenchman's stern. Nereide, August the 20th, 1810. At 3 p.m., the enemy, having passed by, they anchored in 20 fathom water off the Olive Bank. Nereide having lost her driver boom and two upper yards. Captain repaired to Ile de la Passe to reinforce with the returned soldiers. How did you like that, Dr. Maturin? We have them in the bag.
I do not perceive the ships to be much damaged.
Well, if it had not been for that infernal luck of the flag, we should have sunk the Minerve. But if we had, the others would have run. As it is, we have them now, hard up in a clinch.
Will they not be repairing to come at us again?
Not they. I will go back to my ship. Send to Pym. If he can spare me just one frigate, I will lead in and destroy the whole circus.
Would it not be better to sail the Nereide away from danger and bring down the reinforcements?
Certainly not. Pym ordered me to hold this fort, this island. I shall see it held. To the last. To the last.
Hold her in shot to the larboard guns!
Nereide, August the 21st. At 10, a frigate sighted, rounding Pointe-Desnie under full press of sail. That is the Sirius. Look,
Look sharp with the signal!
What does it signify, if I may ask?
Ready for action, an enemy of inferior strength. Pym will not queer my pitch again this mission. I believe that is Iphigenia and Magician. Damn me, he has brought the whole blockade with him. Dr. Maturin, I believe we may show you something to compare with Commodore Aubrey. Mr. Satterley! Bring her in as quick as ever you can.
What have you to say, colleague, to our patient's present state of agitation?
I am at a loss.
In these circumstances, does it pass the limits of reasonable conduct?
I do not know. I have never seen him like this at all.
You think it morbid?
He may know what he is about, but he may be bent on wiping your friend's eye and damn the whole world, so he does it. Dear God, Maturin, did you ever see a man look so beautiful?
Captain Pym's plan of attack was clear. It made good plain sense.
I should have done little different myself. Never mind maneuvers, Nelson said. Always go at him.
I can see if you would have maneuvered enough not to run aground. Sirius first, then Magician, struck hard more than 400 yards from the French line. Nereid ran in almost alone against the broadsides of five Frenchmen.
My God, the mauling she must have taken.
That familiar cry of the wounded everywhere.
Mr. Briggs? Pass the word for Mr. Briggs.
He is dead, my lord.
Six bells. It's impossible we've been at it so long.
Dr. Maturin, may I beg you to give a hand in the oar? It seems McAdam has had an accident.
Of course.
I should be most infinitely obliged to you, sir.
My lord,
he was caught by a great splinter. The gash across his face is great.
I cannot feel anything, Doctor.
Will you save him?
I will. Go back aloft, Mr. Weber.
I am in the best of hands.
Better than McAdam, certainly. Bloody alcoholic coma.
Go on deck, Mr. Weber.
Lord Clonford, I'm going to cut away your eye.
Your blade is oddly cold.
Sirius, August the 21st. Nereid lying between our ships and the French. We, therefore, unable to fire upon them. At 5 p.m., requested Lord Clonfert to come aboard Sirius.
Pym wants me to abandon my men. I'll see him damned first. Tell him I have struck.
Sir, you'll never get up.
My legs are sound enough. I am going on deck. I must do this properly, not like a scrub.
Take care of the bandages on your neck. The carotid artery is laid bare. Do not pluck at the dressing, or you may die within the minute.
It is done, Doctor. I am most truly grateful to you.
My lord, when I've finished here, I wish to go to the Sirius.
What? Do you not care much for a French prison?
The remaining boat is fit to take me, I believe. I beg you will give an order to that effect.
Make it so, Dr. Maturin. I wish you at least may get away. Thank you again.
Odysseia, August the 27th. Dr. Maturin informed us of the loss of the Nereid, Iphigenia, Sirius, and Magician in action with the enemy. The two latter burned to avoid capture, having struck upon rocks not known. Fresh breezes and dark, cloudy weather.
Dr. Maturin! I shall not carry the news that you must take, sir. Not for £1,000.
The launch prepared?
It is.
You would oblige me extremely, sir, by carrying a letter. It's for my wife. I doubt I shall see her again this war.
Goodbye to you, Mr. Webber.
Are you for leaving us so soon, Collie?
Well, make a land there. Make a land with a great Dublin physician.
I've left your patients as well as I was able, Dr. McCadden.
Oh, have you now? Come you this way, then, till we see.
Half and even more of the ship's company have passed through my bloody hands. It is time for me to go.
Come and see your patient, Dr. Maturin, you are.
Dear God.
I wanted to comfort him. His colours were struck. He was so... Aubrey will come, I said. Aubrey will be here and you shall have your Nereid back again.
Close his eyes.
Never, says he. Not from Jack Aubrey. You told him of the bandage. You bloody whore, Maturin. You told him how. You and you, Jack Aubrey, did it. Jack Aubrey destroyed him.
In The Mauritius Command by Patrick O'Brien, dramatized by Roger Daines, Captain Jack Aubrey was played by David Robb. Dr. Stephen Maturin by Richard Delane, Lord Clonfert, Sam Dale, Dr. McAdam, Sean Baker, Lieutenant Colonel Keating, Thomas Arnold, Lieutenant Webber, Pip Carter, Captain Pym, Brian Bowles, Governor Farker, David Rintoul, Captain Corbett, Christian Rodska, Lieutenant Seymour, Max Dowler, Lieutenant Briggs, Niasha Hatendi, and Midshipman Cotton, Lloyd Thomas. Other parts were played by members of the cast. The director was Bruce Young.
And you can hear the final episode of The Mauritius Command at the same time next week.
In every fairy tale, it's where they all live happily ever after, in the castle. But what's it really like to live in a castle? Does it soak up your whole life? And is any house worth that? Or is it, as it seems, a magic world apart in which anything can and does happen? The owners of two of England's greatest houses talk to us on Between Ourselves on Tuesday morning at 9 and again at 9:30 at night.